Welcome to the Brampton Talks podcast. We are happy to be back bringing you more content in 2019. Today on the podcast, we're talking about Public Safety Canada's recent terrorism report, the GO Train fiasco, and a libel suit against Mayor Patrick Brown. Right before the holidays, Public Safety Canada released a terrorism report outlining the top five threats to safety in Canada. It came as a surprise to the Sikh community that they were listed as one of those top five threats.
Public Safety Canada releases a report every year highlighting what are the main terrorist threats to Canadians in Canada. And this year, they listed five major threats under the heading, the current terrorist threat to Canada. So you have Sunni Islamist extremism, right-wing, so essentially the white nationalist extremism, Shia extremism, Canadian extremist travelers, and then for the first time, Sikh, in brackets, Khalistani extremism. This caused a major uproar in the Sikh community, which is heavily concentrated here in Brampton and Surrey.
Yeah, it was like craziness. I mean, it dropped right before the holidays, which was already a crazy time for people, and then to throw this into the mix of things, I think people were just really shocked.
Yeah, it came as a real big surprise. And I'm going to put my World Sikh Organization hat on here for a second. I am the executive director for the organization, and we're one of the community institutions and activists that were leading the drive here and challenging this report. What came as a surprise to us is that the Sikhs had never been mentioned before in a report like this, right? And not to this degree. Secondly, you actually go look at the report. You know, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt. You know, I'm more than happy to read the report, see what's in there, see what the thread is that highlights us as one of the five major threats. And if you go look at the five major threats, you see things like ISIS, you see things like Al-Qaeda, you see things like white supremacy, white nationalism. And like you see elsewhere in the world, you see hate crime spiking in a place like Canada as well. You go to each of these sections, you know, they dedicate a page, two pages, three pages on each, kind of highlighting at a very high level, but still highlighting why these are major threats. And if you go look in the other reports, they always reference back to these fives, you know, financing, there's, you know, threats of individuals coming in and out of the country, et cetera, et cetera. You go to the sixth section, it's literally one paragraph in a 32, 31 page report. That's all it is. It seems completely out of place and very random. And all they're referencing in that paragraph is 1985 Air India, which was a terrorist act, which was a heinous crime, which was a senseless act of violence. Everyone agrees with that. But you're referring to the top five terrorist threats to Canada as of today, and your only reference is from 30 plus years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right when you say it's out of place. It's almost like they needed a word count to make, you know, when you're writing an essay in university and you're like, ah, crap, I need 500 words. Let me just throw in, you know, some random stuff.
Public Safety was like, okay, you got to write a listicle.
We only have four. Oh, ah, crap.
So it's not, look, it's just not didn't make any sense. And I'm very passionate about this. This is like where I wish sometimes we had a video camera so you can be on YouTube and just kind of like see me flailing my hands everywhere. You know, this is something that upset a lot of people and upset myself as well, because it struck us as a community as a total capitulation to the Indian government and the Indian government narrative that has been highlighted quite extensively after Trudeau's trip to India. Mm-hmm. And you see this narrative that drives out of India, and we've covered this on the show before, why in the current state of Indian politics, it's, you know, beneficial to the Indian nationalist government to keep drumming this minorities are a threat drum internationally, so they can play that domestically in an election year, which is this year. So we look at this as almost like a total capitulation, and then we started challenging it. And the more we challenge it, the more we realize, yeah, this does look like a total capitulation. There's nothing there. A hashtag started going around, prove it or remove it. You got multi-partisan backlash to this from the Conservatives, from the NDP, Liberal MPs themselves started challenging it, and you start seeing that this something doesn't smell right about this.
It just seems too like it was, I don't know, you don't want to go into an election year. They've got to be really careful. We've talked about this before, that this is the Liberals to lose, you know? And when they do crap like this, it's like, what is happening, guys? Like, what were you thinking? It doesn't make any sense.
When you look at nowadays, Khalistani activism it's premised on just, you know, people having an opinion, right?
Yes.
That's all it is, right? Like, there's no danger to the Indian government whatsoever. There's no danger.
It's very political. It's political speech. Exactly. It's very similar to Quebec.
Yeah. That's what it is, right? I mean,
like, if you're just going to equate the conversation of self-determination or separatism to extremism, well, then Quebecers are extremists. Stephen Harper at one time suggested a firewall around Alberta, so I guess he's a terrorist under that definition as well, which is ludicrous, right? It's ludicrous. So
We have the PQ in Parliament.
Yeah, you know? Like, we literally have a party that wants to break away from Canada.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are self-confident enough as a country to allow that political free speech. At a place like India, they're not. And they equate that to extremism.
Yeah.
The community here, or the media here, sorry, and maybe some politicians, look at India, oh, there's a democracy. Oh, they're saying extremism. Well, they probably have the same definition that we do. And they take that as if there's a real threat today of senseless violence from the Sikh community, and to list us on par with ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and white nationalists is actually very offensive.
It totally is. And we're looking at internal threat too, right? Like that they present a threat here in the country at this immediate time, which just doesn't make any sense.
And I think one of the big complaints from the community has been since this is, look, we've sent, 15 plus Sikh MPs. We have four ministers. You're telling us no one was consulted. You're telling us no one's opinion was valued before putting this out.
Yeah.
I will believe, for example, there's a lot of chatter going on. Well, MP Sahota sits on the committee that kind of deals with public safety. And she made it very clear, and I believe her, and I think this is factually true, that the committee actually didn't see the report. This was purely done from the ministry. So Ralph Goodale, Minister Goodale, you know, didn't find it useful to, hey, you know, let's sit down with our Sikh MPs and kind of consult them a bit on what this is. It's literally one paragraph. You can literally WhatsApp that paragraph to every MP and be like, hey, do you guys mind just checking this out? You don't even have to send the whole damn PDF. So the fact that that didn't happen is kind of offensive. Secondly, the reaction to the community's outrage on this was a little offensive as well, where you had some MPs and some ministers say, oh, words matter, right? You know, we shouldn't be labeling this, like, the Sikh community in its entirety. That's only half the argument. The other half is, where's the evidence to include them at all, right? It's not so much that words matter, evidence matters. The fact that you've included it, the damage has been done, right? Now you have to kind of prove it or remove it. It's as simple as that.
So we'll see what sort of evolves, because they've said they're going to re-examine everything. And they left it at that because it was the holidays. So I think in the coming months, maybe we'll see something come back.
Well, I'll end with this. I think there's a certain hope within some political circles that this will just blow over. And this is just
Well, that's the hope going into this year, right? Yeah.
And what often happens with, you know, quote unquote ethnic issues is that, oh, this is just a single stakeholder issue. Oh, this is just those WSO guys. Or, oh, this is just those, you know, that pesky Tamil organization, or those, you know, that one single Muslim group. No, this is a community-wide issue. Like, a lot of people are concerned about this. And the hope is that something will come out of it. You know, you saw for the first time, almost unprecedented, three major Gurdwara-wide committees. So these are umbrella organizations that oversee a whole bunch of different Gurdwaras, actually came together from across the country to challenge the government on this and request an in-person meeting. The WSO, we also request an in-person meeting, and we've all got response that a meeting will be held, hopefully very shortly. We're still waiting for confirmation at this point in time, at this date. But the kind of lackluster, dragging their feet type of response that I'm kind of sensing at this point, we're hoping is just because of the holidays, and that this is being taken seriously, that as a very serious community-wide concern. Because you got to see this in the context of the disastrous India trip. There's an India-Canada security sharing framework, which was disbanded in the past because India was using that information to torture their citizens without grounds. Now you have this terror report. You're kind of starting to see, you know, this is not a one-off. This is now a couple of things in a row that highlight to the Sikh community that, you know, there's some issues with how the government is handling these files.
Yeah, I think it'll be up to all of us, you know, the people that are really vested in this, to hold them to account, because like you said, it was the holidays and things sort of fall through the cracks a little bit then. And now it's time to put the pressure back on, right? To see the actual results that we want to see, that it doesn't just fall to the wayside and we never hear about what happens to this report ever again.
Yeah, it's welcoming that they said they're going to look at it, right? And it's welcoming that they're going to look at the language. And hopefully that also includes looking at the mere fact that the Sikh community has been included this way, like one paragraph in a 32-page report. You know, at this point, we can just wait and see. And if the outcomes don't come, then we just start banging the drum again.
the Ford government recently announced that they would be making changes to the GO train schedule on the Kitchener GO line. On January 7th, those changes came into effect, and almost immediately, chaos ensued.
Yeah, it's hilarious because you go on WhatsApp. Sorry. Yeah, well, WhatsApp, the videos are going on WhatsApp.
This
as well.
It's where you get all your information from.
I know, but you know, this is very unique to like the brown community that someone told me once. Like,
it is.
No one else uses WhatsApp like we do.
No.
It's like our life revolves around WhatsApp. Okay, so, you know, videos were going on WhatsApp, but there was on Twitter and other social media platforms of just like backed up long lines at Brampton stations or stations on the Kitchener line because of just the effect of the Ford government's decision had on Brampton GO stations.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Brampton got the shortest end of the stick here. Like, let's be real. I think when people saw the changes in December, almost immediately Bramptonists was writing about the fact that this was going to have negative effects on Brampton commuters. We're seeing trains that were outright canceled. The 4:50 p.m. going westbound was canceled. It's a very popular train in favor of a train, and that's an express train. So for Brampton commuters, it's a big one because it gets them back to the city faster, in favor of a train that would stop at more places before it arrived in Brampton. And on the morning side, we were seeing trains starting in Kitchener. So by the time they get to Brampton, they're fuller. So really, Brampton being in sort of the middle of the line really got screwed.
I'm going to go off on a limb and say this seems like another attempt to screw over Brampton.
Well, it's
like let's
everyone kind
honest.
Of like does well with this change,
except for Brampton,
yeah. Who does like significantly
worse than everybody else.
Let's put this into context. Patrick Brown gets elected. All right, we then lose university funding right off the bat afterwards, and now there's talks of amalgamation. And finally, there's this, right? Everybody gets a slower commute. And I feel like this is punishment for not having enough conservative MPPs or just having Patrick Brown as mayor. And I feel like, you know, on top of it, it's a very like conscious decision because what they did was they canceled any, you know, help to Metrolinx for dealing with the freight bypass. Right. And this is what would have gotten a lot of CN freight rail, you know, diverted off onto a different path, allowing the Kitchener GO to Union Station rail line to have more commuter rail and essentially more frequency for us. But that's off the table now.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing here is like for Kitchener, it's better. They're getting more trains leaving their city now. They're getting, I think, are they getting any more trains in the evenings? I don't remember. But
regardless, they're doing better.
They have more PC MPPs.
This is where you need Chris Drew on the show.
Definitely.
Just so you can talk about
right. Yeah. You know, Acton's getting more service. Guelph is getting more service. Georgetown to a degree. There's more stops at Weston and Malton and Bloor.
Look, everyone's doing better, but Brampton.
Everybody
Brampton be getting screwed. Like, let's be honest about this.
Everybody with all conservative MPPs are doing so much better.
We essentially lost
city with three NDP MPPs.
Well, we essentially lost one of the most popular trains that services Brampton. We lost an express train at a rush hour time slot. The impact of that will be significant. Those trains are packed like sardine cans
already. And now it's like they're bringing more commuters from Kitchener-Waterloo in the morning, so more commuters to take home. And then, of course, Brampton now has to sit through stops at Bloor, Malton, and Weston, I believe. So it's like for Brampton residents, it's a longer commute.
And
you're already commuting to Toronto
like,
every day.
For people that don't take the GO train, I mean, here's the context. The express trains would go from Mount Pleasant to Union Station within the scope of 40 minutes, right? And what the Ford government has effectively done is it's given every Bramptonian that takes transit around 20 minutes more to their commute.
Yeah, you added 20 minutes more to your commute, and then you also make the service hours less, so your chances of taking that longer commute are actually smaller as well.
Question is, like, do you want to, you know, this is what happens when you start slashing funding, right? I mean, that has to come from somewhere. And in this case, it's your own valuable time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, our council took to Twitter pretty effectively. And
everybody took
media.
To Twitter. People are freaking furious. I knew it was coming. I saw it coming. I was like, January 7th, man, people are going to really. I think it was the holidays. They made the announcement right around the time was Christmas. So it was like easy to ignore, like, oh, we'll think about that in January.
Yeah.
But immediately, like the first day back to work for a lot of people was just a disaster.
Just chaos. And so, I was going to say that the ministry heard the noise. I think Mayor Brown also wrote a letter and issued a public letter recently. When was that from?
That was yesterday. Yeah. So Monday, Tuesday, we saw some city councilors, Paul Vicente, Ward 1-5, taking to Twitter. I think he tweeted right at Metrolinx, and he did get a response. Yeah, their spokesperson
said, he said, go replied. Transit, we may need to look at what is happening here and see what can be done. We need better service for Brampton. And he tagged Go Transit and Metrolinx.
Yes, and Metrolinx did respond. Their spokesperson said, you know, we're monitoring the issue. Yesterday, Patrick Brown, he wrote a letter directly to Metrolinx and the minister asking, you know, for them to give the express train back at the very least and look at the overcrowding. And frankly, he did make a good point in that Brampton was not, they didn't ask Brampton commuters what they needed and wanted when they made these changes, which is crazy and bizarre to me.
I mean, I don't think they even asked, they didn't even ask Metrolinx, you know, whether or not these changes were good. I mean, they just came from the top down. The idea was, we just want to increase, you know, more like increase service, but that didn't necessarily mean anything. It meant that, you know, we have to deal with, you know, being sardines.
And that is what they're continuing to tout, with that they've increased service on the line by 25%. You know, what they're not mentioning is that it screws over Brampton riders, but for them, that's what they keep saying, is that they've increased service.
Yeah. I think it's just continuing that whole theme of Brampton getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
Like, and this seems to be like a common theme in our city. A lot of people used to say this against Mayor Jeffrey, that, you know, Brampton keeps getting the short end of the sticks, and we're seeing that continue to occur here very visibly.
Except, and it's a whole lot more purposeful, you know, giving
it us feels the short that way. It definitely feels that way.
Yeah, you can't say it doesn't.
Yeah. Now, the minister did respond. He responded with a statement late last night just to say that they are monitoring the issues, and then the next few weeks they will be making changes. Because the reality is, like, yes, it does mean bad service for Brampton, but it's also unsafe for all the riders across this line. Like, you're seeing massive overcrowding on these platforms, and that doesn't just affect Brampton riders. It's everybody.
Yeah, I think from the videos, it snakes into, like, the underground, like, into the station. Like, that's how backlog horrible. Is. It's actually very bad.
Yeah.
Kind of hilarious. Imagine standing there. It's a freezing cold. You're like backed up onto the whole tracks, just fearing for your life.
I just think it's funny that they were like, we'll just, you know, tweak this and this and nothing's going to happen. Like, how did they not sort of see this coming?
Well, it's kind of what happens, you know, when you don't consult transit experts, right? Yeah. And it's clear the government did not do that. I mean, there's a reason why Metrolinx would even have express trains, and this very clearly seems to be why. So, I mean, in the future, if the government tells you, hey, you know what, I'm just going to enforce this policy from the top down, and then, you know, organizations like Metrolinx say, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should listen to Metrolinx, yeah. Right? Instead of assuming that Metrolinx is a bunch of, you know, conspiratorial asshats trying to screw us over.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're doing. This is a very clear indication that they know what they're doing when it comes to transit, and we really shouldn't be, you know, politicizing, you know, getting people from A to B.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a fine balance between the common feeling, I think, among some conservative circles that these experts and these studies and these consultants just ruin everything. They have no idea what they're doing. Their heads are in the cloud, and that the people know better. I think you got to strike a bit of a fine balance there.
They didn't ask the people.
I think here they didn't ask the consultants or the people. Yeah. They asked the people in Kitchener probably. But
maybe.
Yeah, they didn't ask the people in Brampton. That seems clear.
Yeah, and then, I mean, when we look at the freight bypass, that's something that's been in the works for years. That was supposed to solve the problem of two-way all-day go and get two-way all-day go on the line. And now they've canceled that, and they're saying that they have a better solution that's going to be more expedient and less money, and they're supposed to be bringing that back in 12 to 18 months. So that will be interesting to see what they have to say, because we all, frankly, want two-way all-day go. That's the ideal situation.
The reality is that without the freight bypass, two-way all-day go is going to be a very stunted and terrible version of, you know, what we would ideally have wanted it to
right.
be, right? So, like, whatever the Liberals had planned, it's not going to be that. It's going to be just whatever you see right now, except maybe with less express trains and, you know, far more, you know, people being packed in far more.
They just seem so confident that they have a better solution. So I'm really, really interested to see what they bring to the table.
They don't. I mean, just look at this solution. It's a bad solution.
You're right.
If you don't have the freight bypass, you will not have a good solution. It's one or the other. You have to have the freight bypass if you want to have a good solution. Anything else is bullshit politics. All right. That's just the reality when it comes to this, you know, train service.
Well, look at the bright side. I think they learned their lesson quickly in 2019, and the next 3 years will be much better.
Let's hope January they take 11th, the Facebook motto of fail fast and you know, iterate.
Yeah, but maybe, maybe they're just applying startup principles. Governance.
Crash and burn.
Why are you against innovation?
Yeah, so we'll be monitoring the situation. Obviously, Brampton riders have really been taking to the internet to voice their opinions, and we'll see what comes of this freight bypass.
I also want to mention, okay, you know, the same sort of, you know, disdain for Metrolinx at the provincial level also exists at the municipal level, and both of you people are wrong. Okay?
You heard it here first, people.
Yes.
You're wrong, according
yes.
to Shiel.
Just you are absolutely wrong. Please, okay.
I feel like this segment was just like us shouting for like.
It makes me so angry to see experts being shoved aside, so that politicians can, you know, get whatever pet project they want. And this is just the case.
That's democracy at work.
Yeah, sure. Yes, of course.
Why do you want unelected elitists making decisions for us, Shiel? Why would you want that when the people can decide?
Except for
why would you want the pilot to pilot the plane decisions. When the people can decide how to pilot the easily. Plane? Right?
Easily. Let's right. test that theory one day.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just rise up in a plane and, you know. Actually, no. We just, we just talked about terrorism earlier.
Yes.
That's not something we should talk about.
Mayor Patrick Brown may be finding himself on the receiving end of a libel suit from Minister of Finance Vic Fedeli based on allegations Brown makes in his recent tell-all book, Takedown.
Takedown! Takedown!
The attempted political assassination of Patrick Brown. Coming to an audiobook near you.
We should probably just read that.
We really should just do like a podcast reading.
We should just podcast reading. An audiobook of this book.
Are you done your intro? Can we start? I think we can start.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's allegations of sexual harassment made in this book. Fedeli obviously takes offense to that. Just to kind of give some context here, so a notice of intent was provided to Patrick Brown that if you do not make a correction and make a public apology, we will sue you. And the difference between libel and defamation, because I know people sometimes get confused between the two, they're essentially the same thing. Just libel looks at written words, and defamation is more so, you know, spoken orally. So if we say something here, you know, that's defamation. If Nikita writes it in the Bramptonist, that's libel.
We don't do that at Bramptonist. We only serve up the facts, real truth. Thank you very much.
But that goes to another point. It's very difficult to be successful in a libel or defamation suit. It's more so the fears of just dragged out expensive legal battles that drives people to one way or the other.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the book, he says that a staffer came to him and told him that Fedeli had, you know, there were some allegations that she had sexually assaulted. Is that the right word?
Harassment.
Okay, that's a better way to put it. That he had sexually harassed her. And Brown says he asked Fedeli to stay away. There was a subsequent investigation, it sounds like. CBC reported that they were able to confirm through the individual's lawyers that the issue was brought up and that Brown was aware of it and that Fedeli obviously was aware that the complaint was filed against him. So now it's interesting. Brown has said that, you know, it's surprising that he would sue him for libel when basically the issue was proven to be true.
Yeah.
And the publishers don't seem willing to back down either.
Well, yeah, CBC, I think, independently verified it, right, before publishing as well as in a story. So again, it's very difficult to prove. And, you know, is this just being used as a tool just to fight out in the public opinion or way?
That's what it seems like this really is about, because it's not going to make a difference. They're not going to retract it or take it out of the book or apologize.
It's a great way for Vic Fedeli to put his sexual harassment scandal on the spotlight.
Again.
So,
Nobody was caring about this until he came back and said, hey, I did not sexually harass
And
that
if
woman.
I'm Patrick Brown, I'm actually like, yeah, hell yeah, bring it on. Because I can sell more books.
Let's face it, I think Brown is winning this one.
Yeah.
Just the fact that he baited Fedeli to do
I think
this.
At a personal petty battle,
oh yeah,
Patrick Brown is doing probably okay in petty points.
Oh, this is good though. This is good for Brown.
But let's zoom out here a bit and look for Brampton. It's just another example of like, hell, these guys will just not get along. Like there is no love between the PC provincial government and the Brampton. New Patrick Brown administration in Brampton.
Yeah, you know, my issue with this is, like, in the book, it kind of contextualizes it, like, you know, how could he criticize me and have all these things to say about the allegations against me that were false when he had his own allegations? It's like, you know, none of these allegations are good, whatever context they're in. Like, I don't know. It's just none of it looks good.
Yeah.
For anybody.
It's a sort of the whataboutism that Russia and China use whenever we try to criticize their human rights abuses. And they're like, well, what about your indigenous people?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, at least we're talking about our indigenous people.
Yeah. Look, we can all be wrong to different degrees.
Yes.
That's allowable.
Yeah.
And we can all be working towards bettering ourselves.
It's interesting, like, you know, neither of these two people have accepted any wrongdoing.
No, you're absolutely right.
Libel suits left and right, so it's like a spaghetti of conservative libel suits.
Yeah,
on it's terrible.
It's just like libel suits all the way down. Just after one libel suit, there's another one underneath it.
One against CTV, one against Patrick Brown.
Yeah,
like, let's see if there's a libel suit against Vic Fedeli next. Right?
Yeah, hey, who knows? Like this has turned out to be kind of a circus.
Tune in on the next episode of.
Well, it's kind of like I'm almost bored of this topic about like the PCs versus Patrick Brown. But the only issue is there's always new stuff coming out.
Well, that's just it. Like if we look at since he's been elected, it's like the book dropped. You know, Doug Ford was calling him out for it, saying that he shouldn't have written it, that it was a disservice to Brampton. It's like every single month.
After he said he shouldn't have written it, he really screwed us over on GO Train service.
Just want to point that out. And regional governance stuff is coming out now for sure. The province
university
is working on that
as well.
University still on the table, but what we're gonna do there? We got a hospital to worry about.
Oh yeah, no more funding for trans. Oh yeah, just so many things. Keep going.
It's a rough time.
You've summed it up. It's like the ball. It's the snowball that just keeps getting bigger as it rolls down a hill. Like Brampton, I don't know. I don't want it to be the dumpster fire of 2019, but it might be the dumpster fire of 2019.
I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. We've become, you know, the playground for, you know, conservatives fighting each other.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's all Brampton is now.
It's kind of like Brampton is like the Afghanistan in the Cold War, where it's like the Soviets and the Americans are just using us as a ground to have their own little proxy.
Exactly.
Fight.
No,
that's my fear for Brampton, is that we're just the center of a larger proxy fight.
Oh, no, that's exactly what we've
become.
And
there's some real issues here at play that we just are going to be us residents anywhere sitting here waiting for those things to be
fixed. I feel like, you know,
and I feel like I'm going to be waiting for
as a card carrying.
I'm going to be a skeleton when we get like, that third hospital.
Full disclosure, right?
Like, / second hospital.
Full disclosure, I'm a supporter of the Liberals generally. And you know what? Let the Conservatives fight it out. Come federal election time. You know what? What do we tell Bramptonians? What did Conservatives ever do to you? Right?
Or do for you.
Do for you.
Yes.
You know? Well, in the case of Doug Ford, do to you.
Yes.
Like, he has actually done things to us, you know, like, you know, screwing over our
services. And the interesting thing, like, at least politically speaking, the interesting thing will be how do the voters of Brampton judge this battle? Are they going to blame Patrick Brown? Or are they going to blame Doug Ford?
Yeah.
You know, whose flag are they going to rally around?
Yeah.
Looking at Brampton, 3 out of 5 seats are NDP.
Yeah.
A bunch of our councils are fairly progressive.
There's also the fact that Liberals are back to second place, or back to second place.
I think polling-wise, right? They seem to bounce back. And a leaderless party.
No leader.
But they're just in crippling debt. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But the federal Liberals are doing well here. Yeah. They're going strong. So it's an interesting like mosaic of parties and interests at play in Brampton. Never a dull day in Brampton politics, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the disappointing thing here is that we've always been waiting for alignment and like that perfect puzzle piece to click into place. So finally, you know, like all of our levels of government are competent people who are not crazies and they work together and they get things done in Brampton. And it's like finally we have a council that's doing well and it's like the province is a crap show. Like I don't know that we're going to get anything done this year.
So I love
next
hockey.
Year, or year after that.
Look, we're like the Edmonton Oilers. We finally got some decent players, but now our management sucks balls. Right? So we finally have like McDavid's of counselors, right? Like we can actually, you know, probably score us some big goals, but we just ruined everything else around them. So that's my only fear, is that you have this bigger fight. We're wasting precious time on the 4 years that we have this council. I have no idea what's going to happen 4 years from now. We have no idea what's going to happen to regional governance. They might just merge us with Mississauga for all we know, right?
That's the rumor. That's the word on the street we're hearing more and more. Like, it keeps coming back up. So, I mean, 2019, stay tuned to Brampton Talks because that might go down.
Yeah, and if it does, like, again, we only have this 4-year window. uncertainty of what we have in front of us.
Rebranding to Peel Talks is my question.
Yeah, you know, I think we should have that.
I'm going to secure the domain rights right after this.
Brampton has to be changed.
Peelist.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. We'll see. I'll just get all the domains just in case.
Yeah, blog P.
Yeah.
But the grander issue here is we're wasting time with a council that's actually good. And I think we have decent MPs and MPPs as well from all three parties. Actually, we have Conservatives, NDP, and Liberals.
I mean, it's more like the Conservative MPPs have done nothing to convey to their own party that, hey, maybe Brampton.
That's party
stuff.
Politics. Look, I think internally, I'll tell you right now, internally, all these guys go to the bat. They all fight for their cities. They all fight for their constituents. They all want to win.
But publicly, they don't say anything. And that's the reality. None of them have said anything. There was one MPP that said something. She ended up leaving the party. Actually, she's an independent now.
To be fair.
I forget her name.
Yeah, I'm going to compare what the Conservative MPPs have been doing to Ruby Sahota. Ruby Sahota, as you know, with respect to the terror report, she came out against her own party, to speak out against it. Even folks like Nathaniel Erskine Smith, come out against the party to talk about pipelines and stuff like that. The Conservative MPPs are not doing that, and that's because they don't have the guts to do it. And that is the core reality here. The fact that the Liberals, their own MPPs with their own whips have been able to, speak their minds, and, Conservatives don't even, you don't have to yell at your party. You just have to say, I am, we're trying to work on getting us funding. But they didn't even say that.
Yeah,
right?
I think
that's unfortunate.
I think this is a failure of party politics.
Yeah.
Right? As someone who has dabbled or made friends and worked in all three major parties, I can say with some real good confidence that party politics is the failure of our system, and that it's run tightly from the center. It's either the premier's office or the prime minister's office calling the shots. The one place where I feel democracy is in its truest form is municipal politics.
That is
where
true.
You're electing your local representative who speaks freely irrespective of who the mayor is or what other pressures on them. Obviously, they might have their bias about certain things, or they have friends or relationships that they don't want to ruin, or whatever, like human pressures on them, but not the party politic pressure that we have on our MPs and MPPs, because it is a very real problem irrespective of party.
That and Doug Ford is the premier, guys. Like, I wouldn't want to mess with him. I'd be afraid that, someone would be busting and slashing my tires in a dark alley.
Well, it's not even Doug Ford.
I'm scared of him.
Doug Ford's main guy is Dean French, who has had multiple articles written about him as being just, a kind of guy who will literally set you on fire.
Look, man. Crab meat.
If you
cross the floor.
If you don't applaud hard enough, you will literally be set on fire. Like, he'll come and stab you.
You know what? Look. If you're find yourself at odds with your party, you should cross floors.
Yeah, to what party?
The red one.
Yeah.
We got space in the minivan.
Well, what happened to that one MPP who I believe is the Francophone minister?
Yes.
Yep.
What happened to her?
She's sitting independent.
She's still alive, right? Like,
yeah,
nobody, the mafia hasn't,
She went independent. Look, she was from a Francophone riding. Like, this was the one issue that's important to her riding. Like, it was literally impossible for her to win, to hold a position that she did. Right. She can't even play the long game on an issue like that. Like, it was either sink or swim right then and there with that decision.
Yeah.
For our Conservative MPPs here, again, I'm a little biased. Prabhu Sarkar is a good friend of mine. I know he's working hard. They're in a situation where they got 4 years of governance. They're rookie MPPs. They're coming up to the table giving positions on certain things. What are the responses that they're going to get? Well, the budget's tight. We got to cut things here. We can't release money right away on certain things.
We got to cut things harder in Brampton.
We have 4 years to govern. Let's see what 4 years brings. But that's a great point. But Brampton got screwed needlessly on the GO train thing. Like, that is such a needless screw job.
Yeah.
The university issue, everyone got screwed that had a university. Now, every municipality is scrambling to try to save
it. To be fair, they screwed everybody. And then afterwards, they said, we're going to work individually with the different parties at hand to see if we can come up to... come to an
individual
agreement,
playing is
right, and now so now let's look at would they come to Brampton after that?
Yes,
right.
Well,
so
we
it's
know
like
they
it's,
haven't.
It's a screw job.
We know
right?
they haven't.
You know, on the offset, it's like, oh, we screwed everybody, but no, in reality, it's like, oh, we're gonna work.
We're gonna screw Brampton a little harder here.
Yeah, and we're gonna. Yeah. So it's like once again, it always comes back to screwing Brampton a little harder. And so, if you are an MPP elected in Brampton, I think you have to stand up for your constituency.
Yeah, no, and right? I agree. I actually agree with you on that. Like, you have to stand strong for your local constituency. I just don't think party politics is conducive to allowing that.
I don't think they're ready for it yet either. They're both so new. It's the first, they've been there less than a year.
Well, they're backbench rookies.
I hope that at some point that they will speak up for some of the issues here. But the reality is, too, we have not had a meeting with the Premier's office yet.
Yeah. So look, if you go to the, if you want to get something done and you want the politicians to, you know, twist arms and get it passed through, you, it's personal relationships that call the shots at the end of the day. When you're going to the Treasury Board, are you getting the decisions made? There's 100 competing interests, right? The North wants one thing, the Southwest wants another thing, Southeast, and this side wants that side wants something else. And even within a riding, everyone's fighting. Like, there's competing interests left, right, and center on every dollar that is spent. Yep. When it comes push to shove, if two equal projects are sitting in front of you, then it comes down to personal relationships.
Absolutely.
Yep. Right? At the end of the day, we're human beings. We're not, it's very true. You know, we're not just algorithms just punching and what's best.
You know what? Like, at the end of the day, what's happening is that these personal relationships, there's just been fire, you know, around the bridges between them. And
Brampton, and we don't have any.
At the end of the day,
we don't have any.
Our premier and our mayor are babies, they're being babies, and they need to be punished, right? So when I'm talking
about a little bit of time out,
when I'm talking about, you know, treating your conservative MPPs like shit, that's part of the punishment, right? And as Bramptonians, if you want something for your city, you have to fight for it, and you have to treat the people that are, you know, shortchanging us, you know, like the assholes they are. And that's the reality. You know, we can't just, you know, be sitting around waiting for, you know, somebody to be like, oh, you know, maybe they'll care about us next time around. They won't. Right? You know, they've punished us this much. We have to punish them back. It's as simple as that.
So she's getting really Game of Thrones on us over here.
Shashia's, that's a reality.
Shashia's looking at those poll numbers and thinks the Ontario Liberals are coming back with a vengeance 4 years from now. Which they may. Crazy things have happened.
As an old man, I will come back.
Crazy things have happened.
Right? And my city's being screwed over.
So, I think there's a valid point there. Look, at the end of the day, your local representative's there for a reason. They're elected for a reason to hear from the community about issues. And I can, you know, we can all say this with certain level of confidence, that when you write into your MPs, when you call your MPs, when you tell them, hey, you know, things aren't looking right. Like, hey, the university decision was a bad decision. Auto insurance consultancy is happening right now. Consultation is happening right now. You know, voice your opinion on what's wrong with auto insurance. The Go Kitchener Alliance, the university, the hospital. You have to allow your elected representatives know that this is an important issue. Those elected representatives are not shredding your emails. They literally report those, go back and send them to Central like, hey, my constituents are upset about this. You just got to make sure your voice is heard.
That's all from us this week. Thanks for listening in. Brampton Talks is available on Spotify, Apple, and Google, or by visiting bramptonists.com/Brampton Talks.